there's always been some type of excuse. But what it seems this document basically also is saying that they're not going to even use the spread of democracy excuse anymore. Because in the document, basically, it's saying that, you know what, people have different ways of running their systems, and basically we're not even worried about that anymore. So there is definitely fundamental change in what is happening. What do you attribute this to, Joe?
Well, the United States has been in relative decline ever since the end of World War II. So to some extent, they have to acknowledge reality. For example, the last... Trump's segment of the Republican Party, sure, they're less hawkish towards Russia because they aren't comfortable with the idea of taking on Russia and China at the same time. That's actually stupid from an imperial point of view. So they can look more somewhat more rational in a way when they talk about Russia than the Democrats, who are just gung-ho about confronting Russia and China at the same time. So there's kind of an acknowledgement of reality that you're in relative decline and that you have to pick your fights and prioritize. But that's always the case with an empire. But the problem is that when you're an empire, when you're seeking the kind of even regional dominance that they claim they're seeking, it's a global dominance that they're after. But to even do that, they cannot never let any piece of it break away. I mean, that's why Trump's blatantly interfering in the election in Honduras. I mean, these Honduras, unlike Venezuela, doesn't claim to have the world's largest oil reserves or anything, but they can't help but interfere in small countries like Cuba, like even Haiti. They can't let any little piece of the world get away without them being involved and trying to steer it in their direction and undermine its sovereignty. So I think regardless of even if they sincerely wanted to try to pick their battles, but when you're aspiring to be to dominate the world, then you're going to end up getting intervening everywhere because you just can't afford to let anything slip out of your grasp. So I think this is just the difference in the way different factions of the U.S. ruling elite, the way they market themselves. Trump doesn't want to. His base doesn't like things like democracy and pretending that they're going to overthrow Maduro out of some benevolent or altruistic desire to free Venezuelans. They prefer to concoct an excuse that we're defending ourselves. So it's a difference in marketing, but the overall global imperial strategy is the same.
All right. Well, Mike, now the U.S. claims that the situation is calming in the Middle East or Western Asia, but in reality, with Washington's continued support of the Zionist regime, the genocide has not ended in Gaza, and the regime continues to kill people in the West Bank and in Lebanon. The U.S. lights the flame and then says it has stepped out of the fire. I mean, what are your thoughts overall about this? Is this just the U.S. knowing that it has failed in West Asia and is trying to find an escape, or how do you see it?
I think both what you and your friend from Canada said is giving in to an extremely simplistic view of the world situation as a whole right now. And I don't disagree with what you're saying and what both of you are saying about what's happening in the Middle East and in South America. But the crucial thing taking place in the world right now is that the potential of a global nuclear war between the U.S. and Russia, or Russia and China, is being given an alternative approach by what Trump is doing in the total opposite approach of what we've had in previous governments, to try to bring about some cooperation with Russia. And the Russians are very open to this. And he's now going to go meet with Xi Jinping in China. So the potential of having a similar positive relationship with China is also on the table. And nothing can be more important in a world facing economic disintegration and the potential of nuclear war than these three major powers coming together. If we can bring about a sane approach in the U.S. to working with the BRICS countries, working with Russia and with China and the other global South countries, this would be a potential dramatic shift in history. The ending of the colonial era and the unleashing of what could and must be what the LaRouche movement has always fought for, a new architecture based on security and development for every country on Earth. Now, obviously, that doesn't cohere with launching a new insane war in South America, or the continuation of the battle in Gaza and in the Palestinian area.
Okay, let me just jump in here, because isn't that where the problem lies? Understand what you're saying, Mike, as far as perhaps intention in some cases with the U.S. government. But Joe, when we look at the reality that's happening, at the end of the day, the United States is basically the military-industrial complex runs the show. And are they ready to actually give up this hegemonic perspective in creating chaos in order to work together? Yes, we all know that it's better to work together, but that has never been the intent of imperialist entities. I mean, how do you see it?
Well, first of all, the domination of the Western Hemisphere, that makes sense. If you want to confront China and Russia down the road more effectively, you want to secure greater control of the countries closer to you. So what I see this is to some extent some maneuvering to maybe try to get Russia and China basically to sell out South America, Central and South America, and just say, okay, this is our turf. We'll stay out of it, and we'll give you some concessions on other things. So I see that. I see that ultimately is a very sinister maneuver that I don't think is going to prevent the United States from confronting Russia and China, because the very nature of the United States, and you can see it all over this document, is to become the global, become what even more of what it already is, a global empire, a bully that just tells everybody else, including even the Europeans. I mean, it's actually kind of comical in portions of this document where they're demanding, basically shaking down the Europeans for more, and the Canadians for increased military spending. That means, you know, increased money for the U.S. Contractors and stuff. It's just a shakedown. So I think that's in the nature of what the imperial power is. And I think this shift towards the Western Hemisphere is just going to, and if anything, just bring up is just them positioning for themselves for confrontation, more direct confrontation with China and Russia down the road.
Hmm. Well, Mike, what does it mean in your perspective when Washington says it basically wants to reenact the Monroe Doctrine? First of all, what does it mean for Latin America itself? And also, what does it mean for the Europeans? Because there seems to be a definitely clash there from the perspective of the Trump administration towards the Europeans.
Well, the Europeans are totally freaked out by this national security strategy, precisely because of what I said before, which is that this strategy very explicitly says Europe is destroying itself. He doesn't use the word insane, but he's actually demonstrating a insanity in the leadership of the so-called coalition of the willing in Europe, who are hell-bent on continuing the war with Russia. And they even stupidly claim that they could fight the war themselves without the U.S. military backing, and could, in fact, start a war with Russia, which would lead rapidly to global nuclear war and is a level of insanity which has to be identified. So that's the Europeans. In terms of the Monroe Doctrine, I think it's very important to acknowledge that the original Monroe Doctrine was an anti-colonial, anti-imperial policy. It was not to justify U.S. colonial policy in South America. It was to prevent the then colonial powers in Europe from coming into South America. That, unfortunately, was reversed by what was called the Roosevelt Corollary, referring to Teddy Roosevelt, not FDR. Who basically said that, in fact, the U.S. will be militarily involved in South America, and subsequently, as we know, they were. But the original was not that intention. The founding fathers of the United States were not only committed to developing America as a strong industrial democratic power, but were absolutely committed to ending colonial power globally. And they were not able to do that because of changes that took place in the United States and then the ultimate emergence of outright fascism in places in Europe and in Asia. So this is a crisis, but the reality of what's taking place with this national security strategy is hopefully, and this is the way our organization and our associates, should be treating this. We can act to prevent the insanity of a new war in South America. We can stop that. It hasn't happened yet. And we can do that by emphasizing the tremendous positive potential of a U.S.-Russia-Chinese cooperation around development. What should they cooperate on? They should cooperate on developing the Arctic, on developing Africa, on developing Ibero-America. Look what's happened in South America so far. China built the biggest port on the entire Pacific coast, the Chancay port in Peru, and they're talking to Brazil and others about building a bioceanic railroad between the Pacific and the Atlantic, from the Chancay port in Peru up to the Atlantic coast in Brazil. Now, these are the kind of policies that the U.S., with sane leadership, would jump at. It would be tremendous to rebuild the U.S. industrial infrastructure, which is in a state of collapse, not quite as bad as that of Europe, but it's heading in that direction with a financial bubble, with the IT bubble and with the cryptocurrency bubbles, which are now ready to blow apart, bringing about a bigger crisis than the 2008 breakdown.
Okay.
So, you know, these are issues that should be on our table rather than trying to further exemplify that the U.S. cannot be changed and that it's going to go into another round of wars.
What about that, Joe? I mean, I think probably all of us would agree here that that should be on the agenda of the United States, countries working together. I mean, it really works. But that has not been what we have seen from the United States. And now Trump is criticizing, actually, the Europeans and even their crackdown on free speech and political opposition, while at the same time there is crackdown on free speech inside of the United States. So there just seems to be a lot of contradictions in general. I mean, your take on that part of it.
Yeah, well, when people like Trump talk about free speech, they talk about freedom for Nazis to incite violence against minorities. That's what matters to them. They want you to be able to go out on the cameras and say that the immigrants are destroying our country, basically to incite violence against ethnic minorities. They're not going to stick up for the Palestine Action Free. That's when people are getting arrested in the UK and being called terrorists because they're opposed to genocide in Gaza. They're never going to stick up for that. That's not free speech that they care, give a damn about. They just care about the fascists being able to incite against ethnic minorities. So that's all this nonsense about free speech that he mentions in the document. And yeah, I noticed that. The United States, from its founding fathers, has been a genocidal state. I mean, that's even, its foundation was based on genociding. It's writing in the Declaration of Independence that the foreign powers were inciting the original inhabitants, the natives of the United States, against them. So it's always been genocidal from day one. I reject this idea that the founding fathers were some noble figures. I mean, that's just a complete reversal of the truth. So in terms of United States trying to get China and Russia to cooperate, I think this is something dangerous because we've ever seen what kind of cooperation they could get. For example, the China and Russia both abstained on what was basically a genocidal resolution that allowed the United States and Israel to become the with the UN endorsement, become the colonial rulers of Gaza. I mean, and that's just outrageous. So that's the kind of the rest of the world should be opposed to that. If they're going to be cooperating with the United States to help them suppress countries all over the world, then that's something we should
do. All right, let me give Mike 30 seconds. Mike, go ahead. Last comments.
Well, again, you know, these simplistic views which try to create a single view of the direction of what's taking place, rather than thinking like a creative human being about what should we push forward as the necessary positive solution. And again, I mean, we have the potential for a U.S.-Russia-China cooperation, joining the BRICS. Why not have everyone recognize that this is a real potential and that Trump and some of the better people around him, rather than the Rubios and the Hegseths, recognize that.
All right. So sorry, I'm out of time. I'm out of time. Appreciate both of you being with me, Joe Imsberger out of Canada, Mike Billington out of the U.S. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Goodbye.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. The sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You are listening to the program Bridge on Iran Radio with Sheikh Mahdi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Walhamdu wa thana' lillahi rabbil alameen. Wassalatu wassalam ala ashrafi al-anbiya'i wal-mursaleen. Habibi qulubina wa tabibi nufusina abil qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad wa ala ali baytihi al-tayyibin al-tahirin. Respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum. This is a great pleasure, a great blessing in my life to be spending a few minutes of our day on the great legacy of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, letters that he has written to the Almighty Lord in the language of supplication, letters that reading those letters teaches us life lessons that can improve the quality of our lives. I would call it life coaching, right? The 20th dua, the 20th supplication of Sahifa Sajjadiya is on the title, or is under the title of noble, asking Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, supplicating to the Almighty on noble moral traits and acts pleasing to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Fi وَكَانَ مِن دُعَائِهِ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ فِي مَكَارِمِ الْأَخْلَاقِ وَمَرْضِيِ الْأَفْعَالِ. The dua starts, the supplication starts with this: Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. O Allah, bless Muhammad and his household. Wa balligh bi imani akmal al iman. Cause my faith to reach the most perfect faith. Waj'al yaqini afdal al yaqin. Make my certainty, my conviction, my yaqeen to become the most excellent one, right? To get leveled up, to get upgraded to the most excellent one. And we talked about signs of certainty in the previous session. In this session, I'm going to continue to talk about the signs of certainty in the ahadith and in the words and in the kalam of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, only after a quick break. Stay tuned with us.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana. Rabbana.
All right, respected brothers and sisters, Imam Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam, in a beautiful hadith says, يُسْتَدَلُّ عَلَى الْيَقِينِ بِقَسْرِ الْأَمَلِ وَإِخْلَاسِ الْعَمَلِ وَالزُّهْدِ فِي الدُّنْيَا. Certainty in the heart, in reality, in its core, is inferred by three things. Number one, the shortening of worldly wishes, right? Amal. And here, amal is worldly wishes. Oh, I'm dreaming and craving so much for having a mansion in this dunya, right? This is not a sign of mu'min. A mu'min always strives to increase the quality of the life in this dunya and the hereafter. Does not choose to be poor, right? Does not excuse his laziness with zuhd and abstention, right? This is absolutely a misunderstanding of the concept of zuhd. This is a misunderstanding of what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has wanted from us. You have to strive to increase and promote the quality of your worldly and your hereafter life, right? Both of them at the same time. In fact, you have to focus more on increasing and improving the quality of your residence and dwelling and a stay in the hereafter, which takes a lot of work. But at the same time, that doesn't mean you have to forget about this dunya, right? Imam says one of the signs of a believer is that they have the shortening of worldly desires and wishes, right? It's short. Like, what do you want from this dunya? It's a small, tiny bits of cravings for this dunya. I just want a beautiful house. I just want somewhere that is a shelter for me and my family. We can live a comparably, like, relatively comfortable life. That's about it, right? I'm not after a luxury life, super duper luxury life, right? This is what I want from this dunya. What's your dream? They would never say this, a huge list of wishes and dreams that would never end, right? The second one is wa ikhlas al amal, right? Sincerity of actions, regardless of people giving them applause and encouraging them, or people denouncing them and discouraging them and tearing apart their reputations, they would still do the same thing because of the pleasure, because of the pleasing of the Lord the Almighty. That is what ikhlas is. Sincerity of intentions is sincerity in performing actions, ikhlas al-amal. And the third one is the asceticism, the abstention, the zuhd towards the world, right? This is inconsistent with one's hereafter, with what that is in contradiction with the hereafter. They would have the ability. Zuhd is what, that's how we define zuhd. Zuhd is the ability to be able to prefer akhirah, prefer the hereafter, prefer the eternity over the transient temporary life of this dunya. Let's take another break. Inshallah, we'll be back quickly.
You are listening to the program Bridge on Iran Radio.
All right, another beautiful hadith from our beloved Imam Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam. He says, another sign of a person who has certainty, who has yaqeen, is this: man yastayghin ya'mal jahidan. The one who has yaqeen, the one who has certainty, does what? His actions show it because he works diligently. He works with the full capacity. He works striving with all of his capacity, 100% of his abilities at work. That's the sign of a person who has yaqeen. When you look at the life of the martyrs, right, the lives of these shuhada, especially the recent ones, you see 60 years, 70 years of non-stop work, non-stop sacrifice, non-stop service. The third, another hadith, again from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, he says, what is patience? Defining patience, he says, as-sabru thamaratu al-yaqeen, right? Patience, as-sabr, in tribulations, in difficulties, in moments of obedience, is the fruit of yaqeen, is the fruit of certainty. You have an image of the eternity in your head and you believe in it, then that gives you patience in the ups and downs and difficulties of this dunya. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Bridge on Iran Radio with Sheikh Mahdi.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را suffering within, this is the love has dyed me in blood. Lord, I'm wise, neither mad. Your love caused me overjoy, took my heart and made fond of it. Desired to kill. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and see what love has done to me. Got me deeply involved in despair. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and has done to me, got me deeply involved in this pain. Now and then, like the winds I blow, now and then, like the roads I go, now and then, like the floods I flow. I'm Yunus, mystic of sorrow, suffering wants from top to toe. In the hands of beloved, I write in woe. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and see what love has done to me. Got me deep involved in this pain. Come and see what love has done to me. Come and see what love has done to me. Got me deeply involved in this pain.
That was the week that was. Beyond the headlines, we dissect the stories that shape the past 7 days, from the heart of region to the global stage. God, the compassionate, the merciful. Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to our political chat show, That Was the Week, That Was. We look at global politics and issues of the day, and I'm your host, Leila Garcia. With me here in the studio is veteran journalist and political commentator, Miranda Akhshand. Please stay tuned. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks very much indeed.
Today's discussion is about growing pressure on Pete Hegseth to step down as Pentagon chief with twin scandals engulfing America's war secretary. Pete Hegseth is facing the most serious crisis of his tenure as war secretary, engulfed by allegations of war crimes in the Caribbean and blistering Inspector General report accusing him of mishandling classified military intelligence. Yet despite the long list of trouble and as lawmakers from both political parties call for his resignation, Hegseth showed no sign of stepping down and still has the support of President Trump. The twin crises have engulfed the former Fox News personality in separate but overlapping allegations that lawmakers, policy experts, and former officials say reveal a pattern of dangerous recklessness at the helm of the Pentagon. Democratic legislators have reignited calls for his ouster after revelations that survivors clinging to a wreckage from a September boat strike were deliberately killed in a double-tap attack. And this may be classified as a war crime. While a Defense Department investigation released on Thursday concluded he violated Pentagon policies by sharing sensitive details via the Signal messaging app just hours before airstrike in Yemen. Okay, let's bring in veteran journalist and political commentator Miranda Akhshand.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
My first question is, the most recent controversy comes at the Caribbean campaign centers on the Trump administration extrajudicial strike against suspected drug smugglers in the Caribbean Sea. Tell us more about that.
Yes, calls are mounting for Donald Trump's Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth to resign over an alleged illegal airstrike against a suspected Venezuelan drug smuggling boat. On 2nd of September this year, a U.S. missile hit a vessel, killing several people on board the vessel, although two men survived the initial attack.
Mm-hmm.
But a second airstrike was then ordered to kill both men while they clung on to the wreckage of the boat,
right,
a direct violation of the Geneva Convention, to which the United States is a signatory.
Mm-hmm.
Since the attack, the United States has produced no evidence showing the men were transporting drugs on a boat that experts say could not make the 1,400-mile journey to the United States.
Right.
The two dead men's families say they were just fishermen. Since the attack, the United States has produced no evidence showing the men were transporting drugs on a boat that experts say could not make the 1,400-mile journey to the United States. The two dead men's families say they were just fishermen. Critics, including members of Pete Hegseth's own Republican Party, say that targeting defenseless survivors amounts to potential war crimes.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Senator Mike Round said, "I think the first thing we need to do is to get to the facts. We're just going to get to the facts first."
Mm-hmm.
Now, Democratic Senator Susan Collins warned that killing people from a wrecked ship would be wrong under
right.
international law. And Senator Jim Justice called the double strike unacceptable, arguing that he supported the war on drugs,
mm-hmm.
but he did not support killing of defenseless people clinging on to the wreckage of a boat.
Right.
The Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, whom Donald Trump has renamed Secretary of War, has cited the fog of war in defense of the blow-up strike that killed two survivors from the initial strike on the boat.
Right.
Hegseth has repeatedly gloated on social media about the U.S. naval attacks, posting graphic footage of the airstrike.
Mm-hmm.
His comments came on the day the leader of the world's Catholics, Pope Leo, urged Donald Trump not to try to oust Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro using military force.
Yeah.
Now, Donald Trump has justified the Caribbean campaign as essential to combating fentanyl trafficking, claiming that each destroyed vessel saves 25,000 American lives,
mm-hmm.
though various former officials and drug policy experts and fact-checkers have all called this figure absurd, noting that fentanyl primarily enters the United States by land from Mexico and not via the sea from Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
The legality of their airstrikes came under intense scrutiny after the public learned that two men who survived the initial 2nd of September attack could be seen amid the wreckage when a lethal follow-up airstrike was ordered.
Right.
While the Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth initially dismissed the reporting of this incident as fabricated, but he later acknowledged and confirmed the basic facts during a cabinet meeting this week. He said he acted in the fog of war, but he also said he didn't stick around to observe the rest of the mission.
Yeah. Senator Patty Murray, the Democratic Vice Chair of the Senate Appropriation Committee, has called for a Pete Hegseth firing. What are the Democrats saying about Hegseth?
Yes, the Democratic Senator Patty Murray, the Vice Chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, called for Pete Hegseth firing after a bipartisan briefing on this incident where two survivors of the initial attack on the boat clinging on to the wreckage of the boat, they were both killed in a second airstrike on the same boat.
Right.
Now, Senator Patty Murray, Democratic Senator, said, between overseeing this campaign in the Caribbean, risking U.S. service members' lives by sharing war plans on Signal messaging app and so much else, it could not be more obvious that Secretary Hegseth is unfit for the role and it is past time for him to go. The new Democratic coalition, the largest Democratic caucus in the House with 116 members who describe themselves as fiscally moderate, issued their own statement calling Pete Hegseth incompetent, reckless, and a threat to the lives of the men and women who serve in the United States Armed Forces. The New Democrat Coalition Chair, Brad Schneider, and National Security Working Group Chair, Jill Cisneros, accused the Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth of lying, deflecting, and scapegoating subordinates while refusing to take any accountability and
mm-hmm.
responsibility.
Yeah.
Time and time again, the Secretary has lied, dodged, deflected, and shockingly scapegoated his subordinates, they said. He's a disgrace to the office that he holds and should resign immediately before his actions cost the lives of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Emily Tripp, executive director of Air Wars, a civilian harms watchdog that monitors military conflicts, called on the Trump administration to be more transparent about the airstrikes in the Caribbean Sea, saying the organization would like to know what considerations are made around shipwreck survivors and why the use of force was chosen over search and rescue when, as far as we understand, the targets here are the drugs in the boats,
mm-hmm.
not the actual people on board the boats.
Right.
The Pentagon mixed up its talking points and struggled to provide clear answers about the chain of command for the airstrikes. While the White House initially suggested that Admiral Frank Bradley, commander of the Southern Command Special Operations, ordered the follow-up strike on the wreckage of the boat, Pete Hegseth later said that Admiral Bradley made the call with his authorization and had complete authority to act independently. But what has President Trump said about this? Well, President Trump has claimed that he and Hegseth knew nothing about the operational details of this. Trump even suggested he would not have wanted the second airstrike on the wreckage of the boat.
Yeah.
So that's the situation
I
there.
See. Yeah. The Defense Department Inspector General report released on Thursday concluded that Hegseth violated Pentagon policies by using Signal to share precise details about upcoming airstrike on Yemen. Can you provide us with more details about this?
Yes, I can. Compounding Pete Hegseth's bad week, a report by Pentagon's Inspector General has concluded that he violated Pentagon policies by using the Signal messaging app to share precise details about upcoming airstrikes in Yemen, including the quantity and airstrike times of manned U.S. aircraft over hostile territory approximately 2 to 4 hours before the missions were executed on 15th of March this year.
Mm-hmm.
The report by Pentagon's Inspector General determined that Hegseth's actions created a risk to operational security that could have resulted in failed U.S. mission objectives and potential harm to U.S. pilots. The information, which was marked as secret and not to be shared with foreign nationals, was transmitted via Pete Hegseth's unclassified personal device in group chats with other Trump administration officials. The investigation also found that Hegseth failed to retain all associated messages, violating federal record-keeping requirements.
I see.
Now, Senator Jack Reed, the top Democrat on the Armed Services Committee, said the report made clear that Secretary Hegseth violated Department of Defense policies and shared information that was classified at the time it was sent to him.
Right.
These were precise strike timings and locations that, had they fallen into enemy hands, could have enabled the Houthis in Yemen to target American pilots. So Senator Roger Wicker, a Republican chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee, has actually defended Pete Hegseth's actions, saying that Hegseth was within his authority to do what he did. But he's the only one who's actually defended Hegseth. All the other senators have attacked Hegseth and described him as incompetent and putting U.S. service members' lives at risk, U.S. pilots' lives at risk, precisely because of what he did.
Listening to the Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran, English Radio. This program entitled, That Was the Week That Was. Some Republicans have also expressed their own concerns about Pentagon Chief Pete Hegseth. Tell us more about that.
Yes, the vast majority of senators who have criticized Pete Hegseth have been Democratic senators, but a number of Republicans have also expressed their own concerns about the Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth. Senator Rand Paul, a Republican senator, suggested that Hegseth had lied about the September boat attack, saying the Defense Secretary either was lying to us or he's incompetent and didn't know it had happened. Republican Congressman Don Bacon told CNN he had seen enough to conclude that Pete Hegseth was not the right leader for the Pentagon.
Right.
Pete Hegseth's tenure has also been marked by severe dysfunction inside the Pentagon itself, where his own aides earlier this year have been leaking against one another and informing on colleagues in what multiple officials described as a paranoid and chaotic atmosphere inside the Pentagon. The Defense Secretary used a leaked investigation, which the White House had reportedly lost confidence in, to purge three top advisors in the spring with claims that they were identified through what would amount to an illegal, warrantless National Security Agency wiretap. The episode again raised fresh questions about Pete Hegseth's judgment and his ability to manage the Pentagon.
Right. Will Pete Hegseth be forced to resign as a Pentagon chief?
Well, that's a very good question. And the short answer to that is, it is unlikely that he'll be forced to resign. It is unlikely that he will be forced to resign. Because despite the twin controversies, you know, the controversy over the second attack on the boat, the two people clinging onto the wreckage being killed in the second direct attack on that boat, and the report by Pentagon's Inspector General, which revealed that Pete Hegseth has revealed classified information on a messaging app. So despite those two twin controversies creating what lawmakers have described as an untenable situation for Pete Hegseth, the war secretary, Donald Trump has continued to back Pete Hegseth publicly, with the White House expressing the utmost confidence in its national security team.
Yeah.
Now, since the Senate is controlled by Republicans and Donald Trump is maintaining his support of Pete Hegseth, Hegseth is unlikely to face any meaningful consequences, meaning that he's unlikely to be forced to tender his resignation.
Yeah, right, I see. To sum up very briefly then, there are calls by both Democratic and Republican senators for Pete Hegseth to resign as war secretary. Lawmakers have expressed concerns about Hegseth's tendency to push the blame onto his subordinates. However, Donald Trump's support for Hegseth means that he will probably survive as war secretary. Thank you, Mr. Rakshana, for your insightful analysis.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
For more on these and other critical issues, be sure to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. And that brings us to the end of today's program. Join us again next time for another edition of That Was the Week That Was. Take care and goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. In Islam, the ink of the scholar is more holy than the blood of the martyr. There are an estimated 1.8 billion Muslims in the world, which is about 1.5% of the world's population. Due to the birth and conversion rates, Islam is considered to be the fastest-growing religion in the world today. We start off this hour's programs with A to Z of Life. This program presents an Islamic-Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran, as well as inspirational poetry and stories. Next up will be our radio productions feature. They will be followed by The Key. The program presents short answers to doubts and ambiguities raised about various Islamic and Shiite topics. Our varied radio productions feature will round up this hour's programs. Stay with us for this hour.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, no sleep. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z here on I'm Being Traded with Mrs. Zainab. And so now the title is actually referring to, obviously it isn't getting no sleep, but it's getting no sleep during the night for a particular reason. And I'll just refer to one of the famous martyrs from Holy Defense to sort of exemplify this. So this is about Ibrahim Hadi. So it said that, for example, when he had some of his friends come over to his family house, they would literally stay awake all night. Now, and this is not staying awake all night the way, you know, maybe some friends do. They stay awake all night. And nowadays in our sort of modern societies, kids are sort of teenagers or people even in their 20s and maybe even 30s, I think I know some, will stay awake playing, you know, just gaming all night or watching movies all night or literally just sitting and chatting and whatever, consuming their snack food all night, just having a catch-up. But no, when Ibrahim Hadi had his friends come over and they were staying awake all night, what they would do was they would read the Quran and pray all night. And obviously this is... So I wonder whether this is a habit that many of us have to actually do this. And obviously, we can do this on our own. And for sure, it's not that difficult to sort of just devote some extra time, even if it's not. Obviously, it can't be every night because, you know, we have jobs to go to. We have unis to go to, school to go to, other duties in the family. But and obviously on Qadr night, the Qadr nights, this is when obviously we do stay up all night and we read the Quran, we pray and we make lots of dua. But for sure we can do this other times during the year, and it's extremely beneficial to actually just have that, devote that time in a sense to sort of strengthen, re-energize our connection with Allah. Welcome back to HZ here on I'm Being Trade with me, Sister Zainab. And so I'm talking about this idea that we can stay awake all night in worship, we can make dua, and maybe it's also just, this should also just serve as a reminder to, now I'm aware that, I don't know whether it's many or some people obviously do the night prayer. And this is something that's hugely beneficial. And even if, for example, you're not a person who manages to do the night prayer every night, or not even very often, but even if it occurs to you once or a few times, or if you're up super early, if you're staying up late, maybe you've got work or study to do, well, just go and also do a night prayer. So this is obviously things that we do on our own, but this idea that, you know, we can get together with family, with friends, just the way we do on Qadr nights, traditionally anyway, but actually do this maybe some other times to actually just have some time during the night, you know, that nice quiet time where we can actually together read Quran or even pray. And I would even add in there, what could even be beneficial is to engage in some sort of deeper conversations, because obviously of many other topics and concepts in Islam. So it might be really useful to then also just have these deeper conversations with our family and friends, where we're really exploring some of the deeper topics, such as the idea, well, what is, you know, the idea that, for example, we ask for guidance from Allah every day. So why do we do that? Why is it so necessary? So in a sense of giving each other a little bit of sort of Islamic education when we can get together when we have these occasions, rather than just talking about, you know, the latest movies or, you know, something we bought or something that's happening that is a bit more superficial. So may, inshallah, we can sort of bring a bit more depth to some of our conversations too. So I pray that's just a reminder and a little bit of an impetus for all of us. And I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of HZ here on Arab English Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
doesn't matter how old you are, games are an integral part of human life. Games are one of the most important adventures in our lives because of our desire for excitement and challenge. Many believe that games play an important role in children's understanding of life. But do all games have this advantage? There are more than 100,000 board games in the world. These games only require a few pieces of paper, a couple of dice, and sometimes a table.
Board games give people the opportunity to sit around a table, look at each other face to face, and actually enjoy each other.
In many cafes around the world, people of different ages gather together to play a board game. These board games may not be worthy in case of people's understanding of life, unlike physical games, but they can reveal some secrets of life to us.
I played games with my family growing up. We didn't have a TV, which I know is a shock and horror to the world, but it made us play more, do more things together.
Since then, Walt Disney has become the largest animation producer in the world. And this film company has made a huge profit by making dozens of memorable cartoons.